Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, has Baylor had a better week since the week they won the national championship in basketball?
That's a great question, because I don't know if you can match it. Your homecoming against BYU, future Big 12 opponent, you play a lights-out game. You get back into the national rankings. You enjoy the bye for a week before you get ready for Texas on October 30th. And, you know, really, if you want to go back to the West Virginia game, this is a pair of games where Baylor has basically been the far better team, and they've dominated both these last two opponents. And I think it's a credit to what the how where this program has come far faster than what I anticipated. But kudos to everyone involved in the program who's put themselves in that position.
Now, the thing that surprised me most about that game, and I put it in my photos and thoughts, is not that Baylor won, but I never felt like there was never a nail-biting moment in that game. Mm-mm. You know, I mean, the closest they got was when Baylor has a 10-point lead and Brigham Young's driving, and then Baylor gets that turnover and returns it for 67 yards.
Right.
And they just controlled that game from start to finish, and Brigham Young is a good team.
Yes, very good team, and that was the only turnover of the game that they forced. And I personally think that they, that came at the opportune time to shut down. You know, I think if BYU scores their field goal or touchdown to make it a one score game, I think obviously the tone of the game probably changes in terms of the urgency and how you want to play it rather than trying to manage it. But it was very impressive on how Baylor, not only did they get the turnover, Stephen, but then they went down and scored off of it. And when they did that, that obviously put the game out of reach. And the other impressive thing about the game was how much they really shut down the running game for BYU. I mean, there was just, you know, Tyler Allgaier just was no factor in this game, 33 total yards, I believe it was. And the way that they just went about doing their business and taking care of things on really all three phases. You couldn't have asked for a better way to get them going as far as all that was concerned. It was very, very impressive for sure.
One of the other things is that Aranda has been talking about three things that they wanted to fix. And, you know, before the season, he said, we want to get our quarterback situation settled. Then number two, he said that he wanted to get the offensive line up to speed. Number three, he said he wanted to address penalties. And that's one of the really nice things, because, you know, you hear coaches come through and they'll say, we want to fix this every week.
Right.
But this is something where you've seen legitimate improvement in the areas where he said this is what we need to do.
Right. Well, I mean, it's part and parcel to how you get a program moving in the right direction, where you get improved quarterback play, then you get improved offensive line play. You know, one can't go without the other, and then cleaning up the penalties. And let's face it, I mean, even through West Virginia, they were pretty bad with penalties. I mean, they were running last in the Big 12 in total penalties and in penalty yardage. And the fact that they went through for the first time in school history without a penalty in a game or accepted penalty. And that's the key there, accepted penalty. I can't even remember if there was a flag thrown on Baylor where BYU declined it. I don't think so. But having said all that, the key here is that the fact that there was 0 for 0 on the penalty yards. And that's something that's been, you know, dogging this team pretty much for the beginning of the season. And the fact that they addressed it and got after it and took care of it far better than you could have imagined. That was something that they did, that they can hang their hat on and build for. Are they going to continue to have games where zero penalties for 0 yards? No, that's not going to happen. But hopefully that this sets the trend so that they don't beat themselves with this, and that their mistakes that are flagged are few and far between.
Now, in the time I've been covering Baylor, this is as fast as I've ever seen discussion start about somebody trying to hire the coach away.
Well, you could say that Matt Rhule was faster when he got that interview by the Indianapolis Colts following the 1-11 season. Now, in terms of the timing of it, where Dave Aranda's name is connected to the LSU job, yeah, maybe a little earlier. And Dave is a lifer college coach. And I don't think he's, mm-hmm. I don't think he's a, if he goes to the pros at any point in his career, I think it's going to be as a defensive assistant, maybe a defensive coordinator. He's that talented of a guy. But my point is that I think from Dave's standpoint, it's natural. When it all broke out on Sunday about Ed Orgeron and LSU coming to a mutual parting of ways following the end of this season, that Dave's name is going to come up. And now I know that it's going to stay there for the rest of the season. Everybody knows this. I mean, they've got five regular season games left. They've got a bowl game potential if they play things out right, that they could be in the Big 12 championship game. I mean, that's a little ways to go here, but you know what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Is that we've got 2 months to go here. And Ed's last season, or Ed's last game is going to be, I think, Thanksgiving weekend, regular season game is going to be Thanksgiving against Texas A&M, I believe. Dave will be on the list. Will he be the first choice? I don't think so at this point, unless Woodward is told by other people there's just no way that we'll take this. And then he comes to Dave and Dave does it. As we get forward into the season, once the regular season ends, or as we get toward the deeper end of the regular season, you know, the last two games are going to be Kansas State on the road November 20th and then home to Tech on the 27th, I think. I think that's when you'll start to see things start to unfold a lot more and then unfold a lot quicker once the season ends.
Okay. Rule. The reason I didn't really count Rule in there was because he started writing his name on NFL bathroom walls the day he signed his first Baylor contract. And I mean, I don't think the Colts just came to Rule and said, hey, we want to interview you.
Right.
All right. Now, with Aranda, you know, he's already turned down a couple of head coaching jobs before he took the Baylor job.
Right.
So I think that, you know, he was looking for something that was a fit. Now, also, and, you know, if you watch the interviews I've done that, you know, we've done with Aranda, you've had as much exposure to Aranda as I have. But my read of him is that he's a very methodical guy and he hasn't even been through a full normal season yet. Mm-hmm. And I think he wants to get a little bit more head coach stuff under his belt before he moves. I tell you who I would be worried about losing at the end of the year is Grimes.
Yeah. In fact, I know some people have talked about, I've seen some things where, some folks look at Grimes as a potential head coaching candidate for maybe some G5 jobs, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I don't know where exactly those would be, but I mean, that's come up. And of course, Jeff would be deserving of that look based on obviously the success he had running the offense at BYU and Zach Wilson. He doesn't need really, I mean, and then just what he's doing at Baylor, getting this offense moving in the right direction and the way he's developed Gary Bohannon and nurtured him along and brought him along to where Gary has become from game manager to playmaker, so to speak, speaks to him. And so I think he's absolutely deserving of a look. Whether or not he stays, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think that's probably the right thing to look at there.
Well, and the thing is that, and again, this is stuff that I said on the set, Baylor is a sweeter head coaching gig than a lot of people realize. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, there are certain limitations. It's a fairly small college in the big setting, you know, a 40-something thousand seat stadium instead right. of a 100,000 seat stadium and stuff like that. So there are right. some limitations, but their practice facilities are top notch.
Yes.
And that Baylor can match any reasonable salary offer. Now, if somebody goes to stupid money, way out of market,
yeah.
You know, I don't think Baylor matches it. You know, but I think a lot of that is just because they're saying, wait a minute, there's a market value here and we're not going to exceed that.
Right.
But the thing is, too, that, you know, and I put it in there that, and I know that Orgeron had some other stuff going on behind the scenes.
Yes.
But that, you know, kind of went in. But the guy still hasn't had a losing season, and they're paying him $16 million to go away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing that I've heard about with Ed was a lot of roster issues there, a lot of mismanagement of the roster, a lot of mismanagement of players on the roster. Obviously, there's the Title IX issue that LSU was running into. You know, Ed's had some personal vices that have worked against him, too. I think he's actually getting divorced right now. And I think a lot of people felt like if you strip away the 2019 national championship season, that was that season kind of masked what was really going on there. I mean, Joe Burrow had the greatest year of any college quarterback, won the Heisman Trophy, that sort of thing. And there were two excellent coordinators that followed him or that were on the staff with Aranda and Brady. And they just everything went together and hit at the right time. And it's really weird, too, because somebody brought this up today. I was watching actually Joe Klatt, the Fox Sports lead game analyst for college football. I watch him every Wednesday. He's on Colin Cowherd's show. And he said, the funny thing about the LSU job is that the last three coaches that have been there, that's Nick Saban, Les Miles, and Ed Orgeron, each of them have won a national title. And the last two have been run out of town.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what you're dealing with about the LSU job.
And that's the thing that I'm kind of talking about is that Baylor will give a coach time. Now, they're not going to let a guy sit there and lose forever, but they will give a coach some time. When you're looking at a USC, when you're looking at a Texas, when you're looking at an LSU, when you're looking at an Alabama, how'd you like to be the guy that follows Saban?
Yeah.
They expect that brand. They expect to be able to roll that helmet out on the field and have 11 wins.
Yeah. I mean, for all we know, a guy like Dabo Swinney could leave Clemson for LSU. I mean, you just don't know. Mm-hmm. Because so much has been made about Dabo following Saban at Alabama. I don't know. Here's what I think will happen. Once LSU and USC picks their coaches, whoever those are, you're going to see a huge domino effect fall in the college ranks where jobs are going to – I think we are on the precipice of potentially a very active college coaching offseason turnover. And I think that's probably right based on the fact that everything was pretty much bottled up because of COVID last year.
Okay, so if we kind of pull this back to the Big 12, with Baylor being off this week, we're not going to jump into the Longhorns until next week, but we're not quite at the halfway point of the Big 12 part of the season. We're over halfway through the season, but we're not quite at the big point, at the halfway point of the Big 12. And I could see some Big 12 coaches going away. I don't think Kansas, I don't think he's going to go away.
Well, no, he just got there. So
they've got to give him time.
Right.
But West Virginia, they're not happy. Kansas State, they're not happy. There's some people saying it's time for Gary Patterson to step down.
Yeah.
But right now, when we look at the Big 12 race, there's basically like four tiers. All right. The number one tier is Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. They're both undefeated, totally control their destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And Oklahoma 4-0, Oklahoma State 3-0. Then you've got Baylor at 3-1 and Iowa State at 2-1. Now, they do not control their destiny to be the home team in the Big 12 championship game, but they control their destiny in terms of getting to the Big 12 championship.
Right, which, obviously that's played at AT&T Stadium, so you would just be the home team in sideline only, actually.
The only difference is what color jersey you wear.
Right. Go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, then you've got Texas and Texas Tech that somebody's got to really bomb for them to have a chance to get in.
Right.
And then below that, you've got, possibly TCU because they've got two losses, but they've only got one win. And then you got K-State, West Virginia, and Kansas. No way, nothing's happening.
I think the jobs that in question that could be up for discussion would be, as you said, I think Neil Brown at West Virginia probably needs to get them close. I mean, he's got a big game this weekend in Fort Worth at TCU that he's got to win, or else I think their whole season could cave in and they could finish like maybe 3-9 or 4-8. I really believe that. Then there's going to be questions what would happen there. You know, obviously Lance Leipold just got there at KU, so that's not going to happen. Chris Kleiman, I think, obviously the 0-3 start in the Big 12 doesn't help them. But I think they'll still give him some time to kind of work through some stuff there. Matt Wells has been under so much fire at Tech over the last 2 years, particularly because of his recruiting and how he builds his roster. But they are 5-2. If they beat Kansas State at home this weekend, they will become bowl eligible. And I think that probably gets – and I think that they'll have a chance to pick up a couple more wins beyond the way. It's just the way that they've lost a couple of their games to Texas and to TCU, where they gave up 70 and 52 points, and they were just blown out of the water, you know, that sort of thing, where they just look completely lost. And so I think that's where a lot of the major concerns are. But, again, if they get to bowl eligibility, maybe find a way to get 7 wins, maybe 8, right? I think that buys them some equity there. I think in Patterson's case, you know, his contract is up at the end of 2024. So there's 3 years left after this one. Now, that doesn't mean that he finishes it. The question would be is, does TCU want to talk to him about an extension beyond that? So that's going to be an interesting discussion there. I think the only way that this, where you could see TCU come to Gary and say, maybe we need to start looking at something different, would be if they just flatline the rest of the season. You know, they're 3-3 right now?
1-2 in the Big 12.
In the Big 12, and their losses are to Texas and against Oklahoma. So it's not like mm-hmm. they've lost to bad teams in the conference. But if they, like, let's look at it this way. If they lose to West Virginia at home, that's a major red flag, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They've got it, but they've still got games with Oklahoma State and Iowa State. I think they finished with Iowa State, if memory serves. And I think from those standpoints, maybe they finished with Kansas. I can't remember which one it is. But in any event, you know, when Gary's talking about trying to get to 6 wins, you know, I've heard him say this numerous times over the last, even last year and this year, he goes, well, I'm trying to get to 6 wins. I'm like, okay, does that mean that you don't think your roster is good enough to compete for the Big 12 championship? And if that's the case, why not? And are TCU fans supposed to settle for that? I think that's the big question there is he talks about that and get into the bowl games, which is great in a Big 12. But I think it also verifies the point that I've made is that when you are a program like a TCU who worked your butt off and in the Big East, in the Conference USA, when Louisville was there and all those folks, and you were winning consistently, you won a lot of conference championships or whatever, you did everything that you were asked, and you got your invite to the Big 12, you had to accept some realities to this. You were going to get big checks for TV revenue every year, but you likely weren't going to be in the Big 12 race year after year after year. So I think that's kind of where the crossroads is for TCU. And I think that's somewhat a little bit of where Baylor is, if we're transitioning to them, is like, they're going to get big checks. Obviously, the four new schools coming in 23, maybe 2024 or whatever will matter. But I also think, too, it's a question of, you know, because Art Briles showed you can win the Big 12 here, obviously, in 13 and 14. But the question is going to be is, can they get back to that level where they are going to be conference championship contenders? Probably can be when Texas and Oklahoma leave. Not that Texas has had anything to do with it lately. But you're going to have 2 major hurdles. I think it's all, I think it's going to be a very interesting offseason for sure.
Yeah. Now Baylor cannot move up or down. The big game that's going to affect them this week is going to be Oklahoma State versus Iowa State.
In Ames. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. In Ames. And Baylor can't move up or down because Oklahoma State's 3-0, Baylor's 3-1. Oklahoma mm-hmm. State has the tiebreaker on them. So if Oklahoma State loses, they're 3-1, but they still got the tiebreaker over Baylor.
Right.
Iowa State is 2-1. If they win, Baylor still got the tiebreaker over them. Now, right. It does make a 3-way tie in which Oklahoma State beat Baylor, Baylor beat Iowa State, and Iowa State beat Oklahoma State if Iowa State wins.
Yeah.
All right.
I kind of think it's October, and we got to wait till they get to the end of the season.
Yeah.
Because we've got so many games left to play. But, you know, you're right. But these all matter. I mean, they really mm-hmm. do. And I don't know. These are four intriguing games. I guess we might as well just go ahead and try and pick these things and see what we think.
Okay. Well, let's start out with number three, Oklahoma, 7-0, 4-0 at Kansas, 1-5, and 0-3. I think I'm going Oklahoma.
Isn't that your free square game?
That's my free square game.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, moving on.
Now, the other three are all pretty compelling, sometimes for different reasons. Kansas State at 3-3 and 0-3 at Texas Tech at 5-2 and 2-2. And like you said, Kansas State needs that game.
I'm going with the Red Raiders on this. I kind of think even I just kind of think that, you know, even though Tech plays such a weird brand of football, it's at Jones Stadium. So I'll go with the Red Raiders in this. And of course, remember, you and I did that 2 weeks ago and they played TCU and look how that happened.
Yeah, but when was the last time you heard Texas Tech and defense mentioned in the same sentence? I mean, wasn't Dykes coaching then?
Yeah.
I think that I'll go Tech because I haven't seen that Kansas State can really move the ball that well.
Right.
Then we have Oklahoma State 6-0, 3-0 at Iowa State 4-2, 2-1. I'm going Iowa State because it's home. And I think Gundy figured it out. He said, we used to have teams that could, you know, these really super teams. He said, you know, he basically said during his coach's interview that, you know, we can lose these games really easy if we're not playing top of our game.
Yeah. They should have lost last week. It's just Texas has got closing problems. They obviously shouldn't be drinking coffee because coffee is for closers. And this is a game where you're tempted again by Iowa State because here's another landmark game or benchmark game for the Cyclones. They had a good win at Kansas State, led that game, I think, throughout, start to finish. Mm-hmm. Have they figured it out? And it's like you're this close that you want to believe in the Cyclones and you don't want to get let down again. And I just can't pick Iowa State. I'm going to go Oklahoma State.
Okay. And then we've got West Virginia at 2-4, 0-3 at TCU, 3-3, 1-2. I got no faith in West Virginia right now. I'm going TCU.
I will too, although it's going to be interesting because Zach Evans, TCU's talented running back, didn't play Norman last week. Maybe that they'll feel like he's ready to – they were willing to risk it. I mean, Max Duggan had a great game in Norman last week, but he was obviously throwing it when they were trailing all the way. You know, Patterson had some questionable decisions that he had during the game that kind of let some people wonder. But I'm going to go with TCU in this because I think West Virginia has a ton of quarterback issues there and their offense is a mess.
Yeah. You know, what you'd mentioned about Oklahoma State is mm-hmm. that they've won two games, their game against Baylor and their game against Texas, that was, I know there's no such thing as a bad win, but boy, those were a couple of ugly wins.
Yes, for sure.
Big 12 men's basketball media days just came up.
Yeah, up in Kansas City where they are. And obviously Scott Drew was there. Matthew Mayer was there. I think Adam Flagler was there. You know, it's of course the poll came out last week where the Bears were third behind Kansas and Texas. They're number eight in the AP national poll. The coaches poll should probably come out here within the next few days or whatever. And so, you know, it's a team. You know, I know that Scott obviously is excited about this year, and he knows that it's a transition year, and that because the last 2 years he had the same group. He talked about that. And now the one thing that's consistent has been his coaching staff. So those are things that will always be of certainty there. And that's why they've been able to get players to develop a lot for that sort of thing. So, I feel like they said all the right things, of course, what you always do at media day. They like their team. I think Scott knows that it's going to take some time to get things developed here on and making sure that everyone understands roles. And of course they don't get started until November 12th. But I think it's going to be an interesting team to watch because it's going to be a team that you might get frustrated with at the beginning of the season, but it's going to be a team that you're going to really like when it starts to come together. Once they get to the Villanova game in December, I think that's going to be all part of what you will watch with them and see how that unfolds there. But for sure, it's a lot of fun. They're a great looking group. And I think it's pretty telling that when you're, number 8 in the preseason poll and you're number 3 in the conference poll, and you basically lost the core of your team. I think that speaks to where your program is at and how it's viewed nationally. So it's a great compliment to Scott's team.
Yeah, nationally, the national poll, of course, the Big 12 poll doesn't really mean a whole lot, you know, because it's preseason and everything gets played. But being able to move up, number 8 is really a great spot to be in there, because you're in the top 10, but you don't have that huge target on your back. Right. But you can move up to get wherever you need to get if you can, you know, play well enough. It's not like you're trying to come up from like number 32 or number 35.
Right. And that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, now last year, of course, that wasn't the case, because they were 1 in one poll and Gonzaga was number 1 in the other poll. And so I think, and obviously they were number 2 trailing Gonzaga all season long. Until obviously we got to the national championship game. But, you know, that's fine. That's a good spot for them. Very talented team. It's going to be fun to watch them come together as we get closer.
All right. You want to close it out for us?
Yes. Obviously, very quiet weekend. This coming up on the weekend, we'll kind of get you updated on some recruiting stuff here. We'll have a blitz, kind of a lighter blitz, if you will, just because there's nothing really going on. And, of course, once we all get back in the swing of things, getting ready for Texas on the 30th, which don't forget is an 11 o'clock start in the morning on the 30th of October. We'll have all full bore coverage of leading up to that game with the Bears and the Longhorns. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.